the Pedal Steel Podcast. From Portland, Oregon, this is the Pedal Steel Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dast. And let me address the elephant in the room. I haven't put out an episode in quite some time. And God, when I recorded this interview, so we're going to hear from Bobby Lee, who, of course, is the founder of the Steel Guitar Forum. And when this interview was recorded, was almost 2 full years ago. And you may be saying to yourself, but Brian, it's been COVID times. You've had so much free time at home. And the answer is sort of not really. I ended up getting busier than I've ever been during this weird pandemic. And, you know, I kind of thank my lucky stars for that because I know a lot of people have not been so lucky. But I've been able to stay extremely busy with some of it pedal steel session work, some of it recording and mixing work. I've invested a lot into my gear this year so that I'm able to do things at home that I wasn't able to do before at home. And I've spent a lot of time just trying to stay afloat, trying to build my business, and it's working. So, you know, we got to thank our lucky stars for that. But it has meant that I haven't had a lot of time to devote to, shall we say, non-money-making pursuits, which unfortunately, as much as we all love podcasts, unless you're at a certain level, it's just sort of a labor of love. But a new development, and this is something actually really cool. I had a guy by the name of Eric Christensen reach out to me and say, "Hey, Brian, I like your podcast. I've listened to all of them. I noticed you haven't put one out in a while. And, you know, it's a big undertaking. Do you need any help?" And I said, "Yes." And so Eric has stepped up to the plate and has helped me with editing, which is one of the most time-consuming parts of at least the way I do the podcast. A lot of podcasts, as you may hear, they don't do much editing, and I think the quality kind of suffers due to that. So I try to put out a product that we can listen to years from now and be proud of, and so editing is part of the equation. And so thank you very much to Eric, who has helped out with the end of this episode and did the entire editing on the next episode. So we're going to have another one for you pretty soon. But without further ado, let's get to the interview. Here's Bobby Lee.
Behind the Bar.
Robert P. Bobby Lee is a pedal steel guitar player and active promoter of the instrument, including founding the Steel Guitar Forum. He's been playing steel guitar since 1972, started performing with country bands in San Francisco in 1975, and became a common fixture in Sonoma County's country music scene starting in 1979. Bobby Lee retired from his career as a performing steel guitarist in February of 2019. Of course, most of us know Bobby as B0B, the Steel Guitar Forum guy. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Hi.
Well, first of all, congratulations on your retirement.
Yeah, it was getting to be too much work for me.
Yeah. No, I know the feeling, and I'm just getting started. But okay, so let's start off by, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your musical background?
Well, I was born in 1949, and, you know, my childhood was all sort of like I was in a daze. I really didn't notice anything at all. And then the Beatles came along in February 1964, and that just, like, woke me up immediately. And, of course, I had to get a guitar. And as a teenager, I played guitar. I never did get very good at it. I also got an imitation Hofner bass that I played, a violin bass.
I love those basses. I wish I had one.
The real Hofners are nice, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that one was. And then I went to San Francisco in 67, you know, with the Summer of Love and all that, to be a hippie. And I sort of quit playing music because I was such a lousy guitarist, and there were such great ones playing in the places around then. So I sort of put it on the back burner for a couple of years. And then I saw Jerry Garcia playing a pedal steel with the New Riders of the Purple Sage. And listen to American Beauty, and that sort of got me interested in the instrument. And there were a bunch of other rock players using pedal steel, around that time too, and that sort of woke me up to the instrument, and I decided, well, I'm going to be a pedal steel player.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think the influence of Jerry Garcia on pedal steel players is hugely underestimated, because I would say about half the people I interview on the podcast, I ask them, how did you discover pedal steel? And they say Jerry Garcia.
Yeah. Well, I also remember, I'm not sure if it was before or after I heard him, but there was one point where I went to a Thanksgiving dinner in a big hall, and there was a band playing, and there was a guy standing up playing a non-pedal steel and just having a great time. And I was really impressed by that, too. I remember he had a stutter button, and he was doing things that I later learned were Speedy West tricks and things.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's a unique sound, but it's a great one. So once you kind of discovered steel and the pedal steel, what resources did you use to learn?
Well, I got the Winnie Winston book, and I pretty much inhaled it. And I followed Tom Bradshaw's column in Guitar Player magazine, and, you know, got all the Steel Guitar Record Club records and the Steel Guitarist magazine and all that.
And did you have a teacher at that time or just kind of self-taught?
No, I'm all self-taught.
You know, that's interesting, because knowing that you're the guy who founded the Steel Guitar Forum, which is where, you know, all of us go for information about the steel guitar, that must have been something you wished you had, you know, at the time when you were first starting out, was a way to connect with other steel players.
Yeah, you know, I would run into someone now and then, but not too often. but I did correspond a lot with Tom Bradshaw.
And that was through mail or on the phone?
Yeah, through mail. Yeah, he was very encouraging. At one point, you know, I've always fooled with different copedents. And, you know, I was wondering, how does music work and how does a steel guitar intersect with that? And, you know, with the number system and all, and I made a cardboard steel guitar slide rule.
Whoa, what?
Nowadays, you see people trying to do software that shows, you know, what happens when you move a pedal and where the notes change and everything.
Yeah.
Well, I had these 10 little strips of cardboard that it was more like cardstock, you know. I mean, not thick brown cardboard, but the white cardstock. And so I made this slide rule to experiment with different copedents. I used up a lot of graph paper, too, trying out copedents.
Yeah.
But I sent the slide rule to Tom Bradshaw, and he returned it with a very nice, very encouraging letter that I still have.
Yeah. Well, do you still have the slide rule?
Yeah.
That's cool. I would love to see a picture of it. Maybe we could post it with the podcast.
I'd have to dig it up, but yeah.
What a cool idea. So explain to me how this slide rule worked. You could basically move one part against the other, and you would see how the intervals changed?
Yeah, because it had the numbers. It used the number system, and they were color-coded, you know, like all the ones, threes, and fives were red, you know, and they had circles around them, all sorts of things, you know, so that your common chords would stand out as you moved a string up or down two frets, you know.
So what copedent did you end up settling on? I'm sure you said you experimented with a lot of them.
Let's see, my first steel guitar was a Wise, W-I-S-E. It was a piece of junk. It had four pedals on it, but they were hinged in the middle, so you could use heel or toe on them.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
I have never even heard of that.
And they were mounted in the case. So the case was the bass, and the guitar just had two legs and cables that went up from this pedal assembly up to the changer. And it would not stay in tune. It broke strings like crazy. It was a horrible instrument. And I had it tuned, I think, to an E7th or something like that. I think I've actually published a picture of the copedent on the forum somewhere. I found it in my notebook. But I was so frustrated by it. I had it in San Francisco, and I got so frustrated that I took it all apart, and I put it in my suitcase, and I hitchhiked back to Pennsylvania. And everywhere I was stopped on the road hitchhiking, I left a part. So that no one would ever have to assemble it and deal with that again.
That is amazing. So, okay, so after you got rid of that one, what did you end up with?
I got a Showbud.
A Showbud?
D139, yeah. And I tuned it to a D pentatonic, D major pentatonic scale.
Wow, interesting. How'd you come up with that?
Well, you know, I it just made sense to me, and it still does. It's like if you take a D6th and add some ninths into it, add some E strings into it. So from top to bottom going down, it goes F sharp, E, D, B, A, F sharp, E, D, B, A.
Okay.
You know, so of course it rocks, you know, because it's a pentatonic scale. It's also a B minor blues scale, you know. So I eventually maxed that out. I kept adding pedals and knee levers to it till it had 6 pedals and 3 knee levers. You can actually see that tuning on my website.
Oh, yes. Let's put a link to your website. What is that link?
B0B.com.
B0B.com. Cool. And so you've got, I was browsing your site a little bit earlier, and you've got some a bunch of articles on there about pedal steel. You've got links to your co-pedance. You've got links to your music. So there's a lot of great stuff on there for people to check out. But let's talk about another website. Let's talk about the Steel Guitar Forum, which you founded back in, what was it, 97?
Yeah.
So where did that idea come from? What made you do that?
Well, there's a history before that. In the mid-80s, or in the early 80s, I got my first computer. And it was an Atari that I bought to play music on. And after that, I got an S100 CPM machine that had a built-in modem on it. I was learning the fourth programming language just because it fascinated me, and I was using it on the Atari. And so I wrote a terminal program on the S100, and I said, well, who am I going to call? Well, it turns out there was a community of bulletin board systems that you call. People would set up a computer with a dedicated phone line, and other people would call it one at a time and leave messages.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And this was a whole cultural thing that was going on back in the 80s. So I got involved. As soon as I wrote the terminal program, I sort of stopped programming for a while because I got hooked on BBSing, which is what's called bulletin board systems, BBS.
Okay.
And so, you know, there were 20 or 30 of them in my hometown. So I would just rotate through calling different ones. And after a while, I got the bug and had to have a phone line installed specifically for my own BBS. And I started running that. And I managed to get a job as a computer programmer. And the company that hired me, they wanted a BBS. So I set up a BBS for them. So I was used to the idea here of, you know, online communication.
Right. So were each of these separate bulletin boards would have their own kind of topic and community around them?
Yeah.
What were some of those topics?
You know, a lot of it was just about BBSing.
All right, we're already the meta, you know, snake eating its tail. It's already starting.
And there were a lot of teenagers involved. We had a local group called SCUM, S-C-U-M, Sonoma County Users of Modems.
Oh, that's great.
And we'd have a meeting every month where we'd, you know, get together in real life. About half of them were teenagers. We'd meet at a pizza place, you know. So anyway, I was into this culture. And then around the mid-90s, the internet came along. And AOL was the big thing. And AOL had a steel guitar section, which was where I met Herb Steiner, by the way. And I thought, wow, this guy is really something. And he still is, you know, he's still a good friend of mine. So I was on America Online, just using a modem, you know, with it. And the internet was coming up, and I got an internet account with West Coast Online. And they gave you free web space with an internet account if you could figure out how to use it, which, of course, I could.
Yeah.
So I learned how to write some HTML, and I put up my own website. And I thought, well, what would be really cool would be if I could have a BBS here for steel guitar players so they wouldn't have to go to AOL. And so I did that. I found some software that was CGI software written in Perl, I think, that just basically made one great big web page. it was really primitive. And so I set it up as a steel guitar forum on it, as a sub page on my website.
Yeah.
And it exploded. People just came from all over. It sort of took me by surprise. And I quickly discovered that if two people posted at the same time, the indexes would get all messed up. So I started fighting the software for about 6 months just to keep it working with the volume of users that I had. And then I ended up switching to some more stable software and actually installing a web server in my house.
Okay, yeah, so you're getting serious.
Yeah, and it just took off, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I joined back in 2005, I think, and I was just starting to play Steel at the time. And every question I could think of had been answered on there, or there was someone who could help me. You know, and yeah. it was kind of the destination to go of, you know, I had, you know, Larry Bim and guys like that here in Portland who I could call up if I needed, you know, somebody to actually take a look at the Steel with me. But for the general questions and gear questions and opinions and advice and all those things, it's like, you've got just years and years now of all these interactions happening on the forum. How many members are active on the forum now?
I don't know how many are active. I know how many there are total.
Okay.
And you can see that at the bottom of the index page. Let's see. Right now, 18,308.
Wow.
There are probably some duplicates in there. People, when they forgot their password, would create a new membership until I started charging for membership and entering them manually myself. You know, it used to be I'd let people create their own membership, and that caused problems because we didn't really know who people were.
Right.
So I instituted a real name policy, and I manually create every new member and charge them $5 for the work I do.
Yeah, I remember paying the $5 and then just thinking later, that is the best value for $5 I've ever gotten access to this, you know, online community that, you know, I'm on there a couple times a week at the very least, usually daily, you know?
Yeah, I'm on there every day.
And one thing that I really appreciate about the Steel Guitar Forum is specifically the classifieds section, because you've got a community here that is, for the most part, pretty close-knit and sort of self-policing. So people aren't likely to scam each other on the Steel Guitar Forum classifieds because there's kind of some built-in accountability. Everybody knows who you are, you know?
Yeah, using real names helps with that. And also the fact that if someone gets scammed, they come to me and I, you know, try and resolve the situation if it's a misunderstanding. If it really is a ripoff, the person who was doing the ripping off gets kicked off. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we don't put up with crooks, you know.
Of course. And I would imagine that, of course, you know, puts you in an awkward situation to have to ban members or anything like that. In fact, that was one of my questions. Are there any drawbacks to, you know, being the moderator of the Steel Guitar Forum?
Well, I can't even think of any.
Well, that's good.
Except for the fact that it's, you know, I want to work, really. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm on it every day and pretty much all day, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't, like if I'm traveling back to Pennsylvania on an airplane, you know, and I'm offline for 12 hours or something, you know, any could have happened in that 12 hours.
Yeah.
So I'm tethered to it, basically.
Right, yeah, I could see that. So how has the forum affected, you know, like your playing and your relationship with the steel guitar?
Well, I see that people go through the same sorts of things that I go through, which is useful, you know. And when I have technical problems that need solved, I turn to it for that, you know. But as far as affecting my playing style, you know, I hardly look at the tablature forum. I'm really a self-taught, self-discovery kind of guy,
mm-hmm.
you know. Very occasionally, I might want to learn something, like, right from the record, but more often, I want to learn the melody and chords and just find positions that I like the sound of. So I don't really use it to learn licks and steel guitar parts and such.
Right.
But there was one thing that came up early on. I used to lower my E's with my left knee right. And someone pointed out that if you do that, you can't get a smooth transition from the F lever to the E flat lever. And that full step change is really useful in the AF position.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about that. I said, well, I'll try that. So I switched it. And since I use the AF position a lot, those licks have become a part of my bag of tricks.
I was just running into that problem on a song where I'm like, I wanted to move from a raised E to a lowered E, and you've got that little like hiccup right in the middle.
Yeah.
Because there's no smooth way to do it, really, with one knee.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't bother a lot of people, but it really made a difference in my playing.
So where did you move? You now lower ease with right knee right?
Right knee left. Yeah.
Cool.
I'll tell you, it took like 2 or 3 years to make that change because I had that muscle memory so ingrained.
Yeah. Yeah, I had I had two steels, one that I play with an Alaskan singer-songwriter named Emma Hill. So I actually bought like a cheaper steel just to keep up in Alaska so I didn't have to fly instruments back and forth every time. Because, you know, I go up there 2 or 3 times a year. That would start to add up with baggage and just the headache of trying to, you know, flying an instrument is a pain.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had the other steel up there and the E's were set up differently. So my E's were lowered, I believe it was right knee left. I can't remember now. It's been so long. And every time I would get up there, you know, that first show, it was like I was doing calculus in my head, like, oh yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. You know, so eventually I brought it down to Portland with me and I had Lynn Stafford was doing some work on my Emmons and I'm like, hey, while you're doing that, can you flip around these knee levers just so they match, you know? Because once you get that muscle memory, it's so hard to change things.
Especially on things that you've memorized.
Yeah.
No, when you're improvising, it's not as hard. But if you've memorized something and then you haven't played it in like months and you sit down, you're on stage and you're playing a solo and you're going full volume with full confidence and all of a sudden you hit the wrong knee lever.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And man, when you make a mistake like that on the steel guitar, it is obvious. You know, it's so easy to fall on your face with this instrument because, you know, there are so many, I don't know, for instance, you know, if you're playing a lap steel or a dobro or something that's in an open tuning, you know, if you're in the right position, there's not much you can do wrong.
Yeah.
But with pedal steel, especially, you know, E9 pedal steel, you've got these chromatic strings that are not necessarily part of a chord. And so you always have to know where you are at any moment or else, you know, you could hit the wrong string or the wrong knee lever and it's just going to clash.
Uh-huh. I've been there.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there's an advantage that the steel guitar has over like a keyboard instrument in that you really only have to learn how to play in one key.
That is true, yeah.
Because you just move it up and down. Where a few years ago, I took up the marimba and I suddenly realized that if I learn something in C and then someone wants me to play it in E, I have to totally relearn it.
Right.
You don't just move things up and down. Those black keys are in a different space.
Yeah, definitely.
There are no black keys on a steel guitar.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the advantage of the, you know, the keyboard instruments is, you know, first of all, that standard notation, you know, printed sheet music is basically like tablature for a piano. You know, it's like one note per key. You always know that when you hit F sharp, F sharp's going to come out, you know?
Yeah.
There's this visual feedback to it that you kind of don't get on the steel guitar because things are, besides that you can play things in different positions, you also have pedals and knee levers that are changing things under the hood, but you're not seeing anything visually change. And I think that's one of the things that kind of melts people's brains when they first, you know, a lot of times it's guitar players and they're like, you know, I've been curious about this. I've always wanted to learn how to play it. And the first thing I usually give them my card and, you know, email and stuff and say, you know, email me. But first place I send them is the steel guitar forum. I say, you know, if you're interested in learning about steel guitar, go on here because every question you can think of has probably been covered on here.
Yeah, that's true.
It's such a valuable resource. And when you decided to start the steel guitar forum, you know, did you have any idea of the impact it would, you know, it would eventually have on the steel community?
No, I was just trying to save money by by not having an AOL account.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I mean, it's sort of, you know, at least in the world of steel guitar players, it's changed the world. And we all have to thank you for that.
You know, I often think that it was sort of preordained that there I was, a steel guitar player who got into BBSing.
Yeah.
And so I developed the knowledge and skill of how to deal with people online for a good decade before I started the steel guitar forum.
Yeah.
You know, and that really helped. So a lot of people, I mean, the steel guitar forum was their first online experience. I remember I took my daughter to, she's grown, by the way, but she went with me to the Steel Guitar Convention, probably around 2005 or so in St. Louis. And she said, you know, with these folks, the Steel Guitar Forum is the internet. It's like, if they want to find something on YouTube, they tell you, well, you go to the forum and you look in this section for this post, and there's a link to it, you know?
Yeah.
It's not that way now because we have Facebook and that, but there really wasn't so much social media then. And people did consider their computer to be a Steel Guitar Forum device.
That's great. Yeah, it's funny the way it's connected people. I mean, I even have people who recognize me from my avatar on the Steel Guitar Forum who go, oh, you're, yeah, I've seen your posts.
I was wondering if that's what you really look like.
Yeah, no, that is. Yeah, I mean, that's an older picture. I should probably update it, but correct me if I'm wrong out there, internet, but as far as I know, I'm the only pedal steel player with dreadlocks, so that makes me pretty easy to spot, you know.
Well, I just sold a steel guitar to Jaron Lanier, and he's playing it, so you're not the only one.
Hey, all right. See, the internet, it knows everything. Well, speaking of you know, identifying characteristics, the B0B handle, where did that come from? Was that from your early, you know, bulletin board days?
Yeah, one of the first bulletin boards I logged on to, it's, you know, you have to create an account, and it said, what's your name? And I said, Bob, and they said, Bob is already used. Well, darn, you know, okay, well, I'll just use a zero instead of an O. And I did B0B. So people in the BBS community got to know me as that. And when it came time to make my own domain name on the internet, I again tried to get bob.com. That didn't work. Microsoft owned it.
Really? What did they do with it?
Microsoft had an early AI project called Bob. Microsoft Bob. That was a real Microsoft product. And so they registered the domain, bob.com. And I couldn't get it, so I got b0b.com.
Yeah.
And now, you know, there are no three-letter domain names left, of course, and it's probably worth some money. And Microsoft eventually let bob.com lapse, but I didn't pick it up fast enough. And a guy in Hawaii got it, who I think he deals in coins or something. I forget what he does. You could try bob.com, and you'll see what it really is now.
So curious to go to check that out. Nice. Okay, well, we've talked about the forum quite a bit, but we haven't really talked about, you know, you as a player. We talked about some of your early influences, Jerry Garcia, and, you know, who are some of your steel influences over the years?
Well, Don Helms, Herb Remington, Jerry Bird, Buddy Emmons, Herb Remington, Speedy West, you know. Yeah, just about everyone, actually. You know, like I said, I got all of the Steel Guitar Record Club records, and I considered Buddy's Black Album to be the equivalent of Sgt. Pepper's for the steel guitar world.
Yeah.
I think it's the greatest steel guitar album ever. Though, really, Mike Daly's new album gives it a run for its money. I mean, really, that's a great album.
So what would you say sets you apart as a steel player? I mean, I know you've experimented with lots of different copedents and kind of finding your own tuning and finding your own way. And like you said, not really going to tablature and learning everybody's licks note for note. So you've kind of forged your own path. So, you know, what would you say defines your style?
I have no idea. You know, I mean, I just try to be musical. But, you know, I do play rock, and I consider myself a folk rock player more than anything. I really, you know, I don't know the standard country intros and solos, but I know the songs.
Yeah.
But if I could talk about the copedents for a minute.
Sure.
I started getting involved in C6 a bit in the 90s, and I eventually ended up getting a Williams crossover guitar so that I could switch from E9th to C6. Without changing my leg positions.
Hmm.
I mean, I tried the Showbud crossover, and it was sort of too clunky for me. So I got a Williams. First, I got a double 10, and then I got a double 12. So I have this Ascended E9th, which I played for 25 years or so on the front neck, and a C6 with an added D string in the middle, a 12-string C6 on the back, with five pedals and five knee levers that you could switch from one to the other. So it was like having 10 pedals and 10 knee levers and 24 strings.
It's overwhelming, man.
Yeah, I had everything, you know. And then I got, it was a bear to change strings, 24 strings, you know. I mean, it took all evening, you know. So I didn't like that about it. And I got to thinking, well, I have all of this, but when I play, I only really use part of it, you know, even between switching necks. I'm not using everything. And then I looked on the internet on AllMusic. I looked at Sneaky Pete's discography, and it's like three pages long of all famous people. And he did it with eight strings.
Yeah.
I said, well, maybe I can distill down this to what I really need from 24 strings down to eight.
Cut it by a third.
So I did. And what I did was I split the difference between E9th and C6 and came up with a D6 Copedon that had five pedals and five knee levers, because that's what I was used to.
Yeah.
And that actually worked really well. Chuck Back at Desert Rose custom built me one. He said he'd never do it again. It was so hard.
Really?
Yeah, well, you know, none of his standard parts were designed for eight string, you know.
Yeah.
But I got that in 2010, and I played it, in 2015, I guess. Oh, heck, I don't know when I got it. Anyway, I played it for, I guess, 6 years, 8 years, I don't know. I played all my gigs with it and never once got a complaint that I wasn't playing E9th. Band leaders are all happy. Musicians are all happy. And I think a lot of what steel guitarists think that they have to have this change and they have to have that change, I think it's all based on what they've heard on records and copying things.
Yeah.
But to play music, it really doesn't matter what Copedon you use. But still, with the eight strings, I felt that I was missing that ringing you get out of the chromatic strings.
Mm-hmm.
I could get the notes from the second string of the E9th on what's the fourth string of the C6, you know, the sixth tone, but I couldn't get that high ninth there. So I thought, well, that would be nine strings. I might as well go to 10. And I talked to Ross Schaefer.
Yeah.
I had played his prototype, his first prototype. He said, you know, this is really good, but it costs so much to make. No one's going to pay $8,000 for a single 10. So about a year after that, I called him and said, you know, I would. I want a single 10, and I want one of your guitars because they're so great. He says, it's funny, I was just about to call you. I'm starting to make three prototypes. So I did get one of those. And by the time he had built the prototypes, he realized that $8,000 was too cheap.
Yes. Yeah, we actually had Ross on the show. So by the time this episode comes out, Ross's episode will be out. And we were talking about pricing and, you know, all the tooling and the design and everything that goes into that new Sierra steel that he's worked on. And he said when he showed his design friends the stuff he was working on, then they said, well, what are you charging for this, about $30,000? And he said, yeah. No, $10,000. They're like, whoa, you're kidding me. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot. A lot goes into it.
Yeah. There are a lot of parts, and the changer is wonderful, and the bell cranks are amazing. You can get perfect timing out of it, and it's so lightweight, and I just love it, and it fits me perfectly. You know, everything goes from my head to the speaker. You know, the guitar isn't in the way.
Mm, that's awesome. So you got a prototype, or you got a Sierra?
Yeah, I got one of those three prototypes he built, and it's tuned to D6th. Which is just like a standard C6 raised a step, and it has E9th pedals on it, in addition to the C6 pedals.
Very cool.
So that's been working out really well for me, and I did a bunch of gigs on that until I retired earlier this year, you know. You know, I'm still playing it. I'll probably make a CD this year or next.
Yeah, so you're still playing at home and recording and...
Yeah, and playing with friends around here in Cloverdale.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was going to ask about that. It's one of the fun questions I like to ask players is, do you have any, you know, best gig, worst gig stories?
You know, I think there were a lot of best gigs. You know, I mean, I was performing for 44 years.
Yeah.
But one worst really stands out. It was over in Napa Valley, and it was at a winery, and the host was a political bigwig. I think maybe the Secretary of State for California or something like that. So there were a lot of rich people there, and the band was pretty much a pickup band, which we would have had no problem entertaining these folks at all. And it would have been a beautiful gig, except for the host, one of his friends, another political bigwig, played the banjo and decided that he was going to play with the band. And the host said that he could do it, you know, and this is the guy paying the bill, right? And so he got this high stool and sat down right beside me. So the banjo was like right in my left ear for the whole gig. And that's my worst gig ever.
That explains a little, a little trend I've seen on the forum. That's funny. Well, let me, as a banjo player, let me apologize on behalf of banjo players everywhere. We're not all that terrible.
No, you're all really nice people.
Oh, way to deflect it. Yes.
No, I think banjos are really beautiful hanging on the wall, you know.
Thank you.
they're very nice instruments.
They can be played in a beautiful way. I'll just put it that way. Well, hey, we're going to wrap it up, but wanted to ask my final question, which is, you know, seeing the progression of steel guitar and especially being so involved with the online presence of steel guitar and all the discussions around steel guitar, what do you predict will be the future of steel guitar?
Well, probably more diversity, but I think that traditional country sounds will continue more in the Americana or folk rock area. I don't think we'll find, you know, super complex licks happening in that or anywhere in hit records or anything. I think there will probably be some inroads in jazz. We see Mike Near's album, Thelonious, was actually a hit on the jazz chart, so that was good. And, of course, Greg Lease gets a lot of exposure for his non-style style of playing, you know. I love the way he interacts with Bill Frisell on Frisell's records.
Yeah.
So I think as an instrument, it's getting more respect, often because it's not in country music so much and it's being heard in other styles of music. I've had people come up to me at gigs and say, wow, have you heard this guy, Robert Randolph? You know,
yeah.
He plays the same instrument, you know, and there's that going on. Robert Randolph, you know, on stage with Eric Clapton, you know, it can't hurt, you know. But I think it'll be accepted in more different kinds of music. I had a chance to play with the Santa Rosa Symphony Orchestra for a show of it was basically a country show. It was a pop show. So you know, the steel guitar was there to add flavor, but the classical musicians there were fascinated by it.
Yeah.
That was real interesting to me. They'd never even heard of it. They wanted to see how it worked, you know. So I think it's going to branch out and expand more.
Well, when it does, we'll see it all unfold right on the steel guitar forum, I'm sure.
I hope so.
A big thanks to Bobby Lee for being our guest on the Pedal Steel podcast, and of course for being so patient for waiting for this particular episode to come out. It's been a weird year, everybody. And again, our huge thanks to Eric Christensen, who has generously offered his time and expertise with editing and working on the show notes and all that sort of stuff. So thank you very much, Eric. And everyone say thank you, Eric, because he is helping these podcast episodes come out in a more timely fashion. All right, we've got the next one for you is going to be with none other than Lloyd Maines. So stay tuned for that one. Hopefully soon I will get to work on it as soon as I can. All right, thanks everybody. Have a good one. And we'll see you next time on the Pedal Steel Podcast.